Hey there, this is Mike from Buddies in Space. So, about this episode. A few days before recording this podcast, I did something really, truly, monumentally stupid. It's all chronicled in the podcast, don't worry, all the gory details, how it happened, why, what. In short, I accidentally told part of a story that I had meant to omit during a wedding toast, and it basically couldn't have had a worse outcome. Now, I didn't do this maliciously or purposefully, and I in no way espouse the opinion of what I said while telling this true story. But unlike in sci-fi and fantasy, you can't undo the past in the real world. I said something very stupid, and while I didn't mean to, I fucked up pretty big. And for that, I am very much sorry, and I feel ashamed. What happened after is kinda nuts, though. And I wanted to capture as honest a version of the story as I could while it was still fresh. So that's what I've included in the latter part of this episode. I tried to avoid embellishing as much as possible when I was telling this to Smike, as rare as that is for me. Consider this my side of the story, an explanation of sorts, even though the damage is done, and I think I might have lost a pretty old friendship. Yes, you'll notice Smike and I have some laughs about what happened. It is impossible not to. Humor is my go-to coping mechanism. If you know me or listen to the podcast, you already know that. Just know that I regret what happened, and if I seem to be flippant as I'm telling this story, I needed to be in order to get the story out coherently. Also, Smike is recovering from some sort of Cthulhu-esque demonic cold, and yeah, I know I just mixed different horror pantheons there, and I tried to remove as much of his coughing as possible. If the audio seems to jump or cut out and then pick back up in places, that's why. Editing out sudden coughing fits is pretty tricky, and sorry for the times that I couldn't edit it out either. We tried to reset when he would cough, but I don't think we did it every time. Anywho, please enjoy Buddies in Space, episode 65, Down in the Dumps. And word to the wise, if awkward stories make you feel uncomfortable, maybe don't listen to the second half of this podcast.
Lots of things to discuss.
Ooh.
It probably sounds, everybody's thinking, who's this guy? Who's this strange person that's now talking on the Buddies in Space show?
Hi, this is Snike Smith, and he'll be taking the place of Smike Smith.
Yes, the nasally challenged S. Michael Smith. And you are the not currently sick.
Physically.
Right.
Emotionally and sleep deprived, yes.
Yeah, so we both had some shitty weekends.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I've had this, I called it the demon cold, and I've had it for like at least 2 weeks now.
You know what it is? It's the It Follows cold.
Oh God.
And now you've passed it on to your wife. It was lurking the whole time.
Yeah, she's not happy about that. Let me tell you.
But it was kind of like she had to see it coming with how long you were sick. I guess.
And it doesn't really hurt. It's just kind of like constantly draining sinus gunk.
Always pleasant.
Yeah. I'll leave it at that. It's been worse. There were a couple of days where I felt like really bad and but now this is like the new normal for me.
And it's a good normal compared to what has previously been.
Well, it's not good.
We haven't seen you in weeks. Right. And just to paint a picture for people at home, Smike is wearing one of those large dog collar things for when they don't chew on their like stitches, and it's filling. It's almost filled to the brim. You're going to spill over my floor. It's filled with his mucus that's just dripping out of his nose.
I told you I needed a hose and a bucket, and I don't see them in here.
Well, I didn't,
thought I was kidding?
No, look, I got the bucket right there. The bucket's ready for you.
I need you to siphon for me.
I'll be right back. We are buddies in space, by the way. I didn't say that before.
I mentioned it.
Yeah, that's true.
So, in lieu of our normal alcoholic potent potable, I have requested something that might hopefully make me feel better.
It still has alcohol, but that is part of the healing aspect of it. I did go very light on yours. This is a traditional, I've never actually had one, hot toddy.
It's very lemony.
One of your eyes was all steamed up on your glasses. Yeah. That was funny.
That's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, whenever I've had a hot toddy. You've ever had a hot toddy?
I don't remember.
It's like what alcoholic actors drink before a show when their voices are bad.
It kind of numbs
things. It numbs. It's got some booze in it. It's got a lot of lemon in it. It's good for the throat. It's, you know, it's got all the aspects of tea. When I've, the few times I've ever had these at a bar, they just stick a tea bag in some water and then pour booze in it. Like usually whiskey. But I thought, well, you're hurting. Let me try to find what a real hot toddy is. But apparently a real hot toddy is honey, lemon juice, and clove. So I went out and actually bought clove.
Okay.
It smells amazing. Mm-hmm. So obviously don't drink any little floaties because there's a ton of clove in there.
Right.
But yeah. And then I did put some bourbon in because they said the bourbon with the vanilla really makes it like an amazing drink.
I brought something to cheer you up.
Yeah, I saw that.
You want that before or you want that now or later? You need cheering up later or do you need it right now?
Let's wait till after I tell my stories.
All right. Well, let's kind of ease our way in. So before that happens... something else I need to talk about.
Okay.
And it's because last night we watched Rogue One.
Oh.
So we can finally have the little Rogue One discussion.
I take it you didn't like it.
I really mixed feelings about it. It felt much more like a Star Wars movie than any of the past four films.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. I'm sure you probably felt the same way.
Yes and no. But it's weird.
It felt
that...
like this is the Star Wars world. This is a Star Wars movie
with a little expansion on the horizons, kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But certainly felt more like one than the last movie.
Yeah.
Than
Episode 7.
Episode 7,
which, as everyone who knows me knows, I hate.
Yeah, it was an interesting movie. I mean, it's kind of a downer.
Yeah. But how ballsy is that? It's a Disney movie, it's a Star Wars property, and they had written a different ending.
Oh.
When they presented it to Catherine, the head of Lucasfilm.
Mm-hmm.
They said, okay, so we have a different ending in mind, but we don't think you'd approve it, so here's the ending of the movie we're pitching to you as the official ending.
Mm-hmm.
And they like read it and like apparently everyone in the room said, spoilers, they all need to die, don't they? Like everyone in the room said that, and the Rogue One people were like, "Yes, yes, that is exactly what needs to happen." But we didn't think you'd let us do it. And they're like, "No, go ahead."
Wow.
So I thought that was cool because, like, originally I guess Jin and Cassian survive, and it's like, all right, where are they in like the original trilogy? Then, you know.
Yeah, and that was kind of a positive thing for me because when. A couple of the other characters die. I mean, everybody dies in this. We'll just get that out there.
If people don't know that by now, like, it's been out for a while. It's on Blu-ray. I feel like once it comes out on video, it's safe.
So, yeah, if some of the other minor-ish characters, like the pilot. I like the pilot.
I did, too. He's a good actor.
If he had died and then the others had not.
It would have felt like a cop-out.
It would have felt like a cop-out.
Yeah, like, here's, like, the obligatory death.
Because he, for me, he was the most sympathetic character. He was the one who, like, he'd already risked everything. I mean, he'd taken probably the biggest chance.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
And he's not, it didn't sound like he was atoning for anything. It sounded like he was just kind of this poor yutz who was, like, this is awful. I have to do something about this.
He's like that great character that a lot of epic tales have that like gets caught up in the machinations of something greater. And then it's like, wait, no, I have a conscience. I need to do something about it.
Yeah.
And then like that one domino like sets off so many others.
Yeah.
And he gets like everyone treats him like shit. I mean, Jesus, he gets mind fucked.
Yeah.
By Saw.
Yeah. I mean, he recovers from it,
which
but it was obviously
was,
not.
It was kind of silly. Because the way Saw was talking, it's like, you're basically, your mind's going to be shattered. And he's like, oh, I'm okay, 20 minutes later.
Well, it was implied that if he lied, then he would have been really messed up.
All right, that's fair.
So, and you know, obviously he didn't have anything to lie about.
True. Simple mind, simple truths.
Yeah.
So, okay, so far you're listing positive experiences. So there must be negatives.
That was a thing, though, because it was such a... I felt like it wanted to be more character-driven than it was.
Okay, yeah.
And I don't feel like any of the characters are really given enough time to breathe.
I've seen that leveled at that a lot, that criticism.
Because there are some really interesting characters, really intriguing, like, oh, wow, this is, you know, Donnie Yen's character.
I know, and Baz or whatever, his partner.
Yeah.
His maybe lover.
No.
Do you know what the director said about that?
No.
So in an interview, someone asked him, like, so are they a couple? And he's like,
shrug.
Just shrug. Like it was by omission that everyone was like, okay. Disney's not quite ready to do that yet openly. So,
but they obviously had a very strong connection.
Yeah.
The problem was that they never really gave them those moments to just kind of be themselves. It was always just like, oh, we'll give them a second to give a look in a one line. You know, a one-liner.
And they managed to speak volumes with that, but...
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
I mean, there are parts I loved, like when they put the bag over his head and he's like, are you kidding me? I am blind.
He and K2SO were the two funniest characters.
Yeah. Yeah, K2 was... What was that one line? I just want you to know, I'm always going to be there for you.
Because
the captain told me to do that.
Yeah, Alan Tudyk basically stole that movie. Like, every scene he was in as the robot was outstanding.
Yeah. But yeah, the lead character, the Jin. Girl, Jed.
Jin.
Mm-hmm. Jin. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm kind of off.
Jed. It's okay. I understand.
I felt like there was a lot going on there, but like, I don't feel like really we got that deep into it. And it was very plotty. It was like very, okay, we're going to this location. And it gives you like the location on the bottom of the screen. Okay, now we're here in the other part of the game. Okay, now we're over here. Okay, now we're over here. We have to tell you all this because it's all important to knowing what, understanding what's going on.
Right.
But I think so much of the personal level stuff got lost in that shuffle. And I thought, you know, there was some compelling stuff there with her parents and I don't know.
What did you think of the dad's big reveal about the Death Star's weakness?
It was an interesting plot point, and I thought... It screamed to me, okay, they're retconning the first movie so that it isn't completely stupid now. And that was, I was like, okay, that's fine. Sure.
It never, personally, it never bothered me that the Death Star had that weakness. I thought it kind of spoke to, like, the Empire's hubris.
Hmm.
You know, it's like, we're not going to look that close. We're an unstoppable planet killer. You know? So I it didn't bother me a great deal, but yes, it was like, okay, let's pause. Appreciate their retconning. I did not feel it was necessary. Okay, now let's move on.
In a sense, though, it kind of detracts from the first movie because there is this sense that the rebels had got these plans and they poured over them.
And figured it out. You're right. No, it's a good point.
But no, it's like here, they're handing it to them on a platter.
It felt convenient. If I could level a criticism at that thing, and the reason I think it would have gone away, in my mind, it could have gone away, was that it just felt too convenient.
And honestly, after that... You know, I'm taking this having not seen Rebels, having not seen all the Clone Wars,
mm-hmm.
but this whole movie and what it does with the first movie retroactively, it really makes you go like, the Rebels aren't really that great.
No,
they just sort of got lucky.
Yeah.
And in that sense, I do think it detracts from the original trilogy.
Okay. Go ahead before I respond.
And just on a really nerd level, the tactics of everything were very interesting, and that it actually makes I think they went too far, and they make some of the first movie stupider. Because
feel like they go back.
We learn, among other things, that, oh, the Death Star can use a hyper jump.
Right.
And
so why didn't it?
So yeah, why were they just like, oh, we got to wait like for an hour to get around the side of the planet.
Right, to blow them for dramatic purposes.
Yeah. So I think, and I mean, I kind of understand why they did that. because they wanted the Death Star appearing in that final shot.
Right.
In view of the planet that it was going to blow up.
I mean, you need line of sight, but it's a dramatic, it's purely dramatic purposes. Yeah, no, you're right. If there can be that exact with their hyperdrive, then they just show up and blow the fucking thing, blow Yavin 4 up. Like,
yeah. And also with the Rebel fleet just sort of jumping in to that spot and mm-hmm. starting the battle, that made all the attacks of everything more, I don't know, more interesting. And it seemed like it served the story necessities more than anything else. Like, we got to get the Rebels there at, like, immediately.
Right. We have to make sure Leia gets here. We have to... So before you keep going, let me
just say... All right, I should back off on that.
So, you know, one of the big problems I have with Episode 7, and this is not something Disney's been shy about, is that to get the full plot, you have to read other books. You know, you have to do all this other work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's them, like, trying to force a new expanded universe down everyone's throat. And I really disagree with that.
Mm-hmm.
So with Rogue One, there is not a lot of that. There is, however, one thing that they specifically, David Filoni, who did Rebels and Clone Wars, specifically said his show did affect. And it might help explain things a little bit. But before I lead into that, I will say that I really liked how desperate and pathetic the rebellion was. It felt like a bunch of kids. It felt like fucking like protests, you know, like we don't really know what we're doing. We got a couple of people who kind of know what we're doing, but we're kind of like winging it. But at the end of the season 3 of Rebels, they actually led directly into why the rebellion was in such dire shape right at that moment and why they would not go to Scarif willingly. Okay. And that was Thrawn, who is one of the best bad guys from the books and who actually got put into canon now, which is cool. They plucked him out of the Legends universe and put him into the official one in the cartoon. Because he's an alien who works for the Empire and he's a genius and he studies culture's art to find their weaknesses. So very like very different than most characters like George that George Lucas would come up with, because he didn't. but he kicked their asses. At the very end of the last season, they had a base, and they were in way better shape to take on the Empire, and they were about to stage like a multi like level like attack on a planet that the Empire had a stronghold on, and then Thrawn just came and destroyed everything, and they barely got away. They lost the previous leader of the rebellion in that battle.
Oh.
So David Filoni's like, if you're wondering why the rebels seem like really not willing to do anything and not very heroic, it's because of, it's right after that.
Okay.
But
I'll buy that.
But that's extra work that I don't think you should need to do.
Right.
So, and I hadn't seen that yet. I just knew when I saw the movie, it's like, they're really not that good at what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're winging it a lot. So that's what I'll say to that. I will admit, so I still really, it's still one of my favorite Star Wars films, Rogue One. I will say that I think it suffers a bit from the prequel has to get from A to B syndrome.
Yeah.
That is somewhat unique. That like, so a couple weeks ago, there was a bunch of headlines in my feed of nerd articles where it was, Screen Rant or whatever did a showing versus telling article why Episode 7 is a better storyteller than Rogue One. And right off the bat, it's like, all right, well, that's an opinion. But I kind of read through it, and it's like, the points they're making are, like, completely ignoring the fact that Rogue One had a tiny window of canon to fit into, and it was going to be constricted by that plus Disney,
right.
plus, like, just reality, versus Episode 7, which could have done anything, yet it still managed to rehash most of the original movie, but they weren't calling that out, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But they made a similar point about how everything was really plotty in Rogue One, and I agree, it's not the best thing, and I think that's multiple scripts, multiple writers, it's that issue probably contributed to it. It could have been leaner. I just think that the overall experience of it as a Star Wars fan, and I just read it again today, it reminded me of the best quote ever, no one hates Star Wars like a Star Wars fan. And I count myself firmly in that. Rogue One satisfies a lot of, like, old school Star Wars need for me. As I said it way back when I saw it, it's morally gray. It isn't like pure heroics. There are no Jedi, you know? So like it feels like it fits and it informs a lot about what comes after it with the original trilogy through retcon. But it does it in a more adult way. Is it perfect? No, I will not say that Rogue One is perfect.
And Again, I will say that the biggest problem I have was just not giving these characters enough room and time to breathe.
I think that was the plottiness, because they came up with really good characters.
And they had Jin go through like such a ridiculous array of everything.
Yeah.
Oh, she's in prison and she's like kind of staying there on the down low.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she's breaking out and she hates the rebels now.
Mm-hmm. She'll fight anyone.
Oh, she's gonna go see this guy who used to be her like replacement father figure.
Right.
And she has like 2 minutes with him at the most.
Which is really tragic.
Yeah, I know. And
Forrest Whitaker fucking chewing the scenery is Saw Gerrera, yeah. Who's not that amazing a character in the cartoon. It was funny.
Yeah, and oh, now she wants to go see her father, and she again gets like a minute at the most.
Not even.
The fuck, man!
I know.
Poor girl.
It's like just putting her through the ringer. Like,
I know.
Just constantly
it is.
Ringing, like Indian burning her worse and worse.
And now, oh, she totally believes in the Rebel Alliance
because she has nothing else.
I know.
Left. Do you think, so let me ask you.
But yeah, she just bounced around like a pinball, and there's no way for the audience to really get, you know, get into that and empathize with her. Because it's just, she's just going through too much.
I forgot what the term is when the character is a stand-in for like...
A cipher?
Yeah, the cipher, thank you. She has elements of the cipher. Do you think this
is a terrible place to put the cipher? I mean, it's the Yannis is like, I'm not going to go through this.
Yeah,
no, I'm not going to take this emotional roller coaster. No, no.
I mean, I thought her performance was good. Do you think there's any kind of sexism issues? Like, swap a guy into that role, would it just feel like an action movie? Because men, I feel like male, like in an action movie, that's pretty common. You know what I mean? Men, like, they'll usually lose a family member, a wife or a kid. Then have that emotional moment, and then go kill 100,000 people.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not calling you sexist. I'm just saying, do you think that informed audiences' reactions? Or
I think it informed that last scene where the male character ends up saving her at the end.
Yeah, that was kind of silly.
Yeah. When it seemed, I mean, that was also a disappointing climactic face-off.
Yeah,
because the whole movie was kind of leading up to the two of them.
The retribution, yeah.
Yeah, for her getting revenge,
mm-hmm.
For everything that had happened. And that was kind of it wasn't all that satisfying. I mean, she just sort of makes it through that encounter.
I mean, that kind of lends itself to the ending as a whole.
Yeah.
I guess it's just like it's like, hey, by the way, heads up, it's going to go downhill now. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to stop. Yeah, I really like Jin. She's about the closest I can think to like them almost getting a female hero in the Star Wars universe correct. Because I still don't think Leia was amazing, you know.
Yeah.
She was in some ways too good. And then don't get me fucking started on Rey. It's ridiculous. So I like Jin. I agree with your point. I wanted to see so many more movies. I wanted to see spinoffs of spinoffs. I wanted to know the Guardian of the Wills. I wanted to know their story. I wanted to, because, I mean,
yeah,
there's one line I heard both times and no one talks about it. But, and I keep forgetting their names. It's Baze and...
I don't remember.
Donnie Yen and the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
Shurit? I think it's like Shurit. I'm just going to say names for them that are somewhat close. I think it's Baze and Shurit. But Shurit looks at the pilot. No, he looks at Cassian when they're in prison in Saw's camp.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, Baze used to be the most devout among us. And it's like, you can barely hear the line. It's like an off-camera line. It's like so thrown away.
Hmm.
And I've yet to see anyone even, but I listened for it the second time to make sure I heard it right. So that guy who has utterly walked away from his faith, but has stayed to protect Donnie Yen for whatever reason, love, camaraderie, friendship, whatever.
Hmm.
Like, there's a massive story. Like, how did he lose his faith?
Yeah.
Like, that's something I want to know so bad. So what did you think of the Vader scene?
Oh, at the end?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was, it was well done. It was probably more accurate to, you know, what would he really be like?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not a wheezing, like wooden, like stand in the original movie. It makes A New Hope seem so silly.
Yeah, a little bit.
Because also they fixed the breathing thing. And Eric's actually bothered Erica because, you know, she's not a Star Wars fan, so she picks up on these things. But when Vader's talking, his suit is breathing. in the original films, which doesn't make sense because he's talking. But okay. in Rogue One, they fixed it. So he only, the ominous Vader breathing only happens when he's not talking.
Okay.
Which I thought was a funny little like, oh, we're fixing
this. I had never noticed that. But I
mean, exactly. And I didn't notice it for years. And then it was like Erica pointed out, and I'm like, oh, fuck, now I can't unhear it. But they noticed they fixed it.
Yeah, and especially when with him like cutting the door through the guy there.
Yeah, when it goes through both. And then,
yeah.
And he like tosses the guy up and then just like lazily. Did you notice that? One of the earlier guys he kills like further into the back where it's a little harder to see. It was a perfect horror movie reveal.
Yeah.
He like just uses the force and pushes him up against the ceiling and then just kind of lazily runs his lightsaber along him and just like eviscerates him. It's like super low key that they did it.
But it wasn't like gory.
No. Well, that's the nice thing about lightsabers is they cauterize. So you don't really have to deal with blood. It's kind of a nice built in like, oh, the science is there. Pushes up the glasses. I love the Battle of Scarif on the ground and in the air. It was so much fun. That's when I take a backseat from being too nitpicky and like, this is just a really enjoyable battle.
Yeah, yeah. There was definitely some good action scenes in that.
The hammerhead Corvette move, like slicing the fucking Star Destroyer. Like, all right, sure, that's great.
Interesting.
So, net plus minus, are you glad you saw it?
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad I saw it. It was, you know, it was entertaining. I was engaged the whole thing. It was never like, why isn't this over yet?
And it's long. It's a long movie.
Yeah, it is. It's like over 2 hours.
Yeah, I think it's like 2 hours 9, something like that. Good. Well, I'm glad you liked it. Yeah, it's not perfect, but it opens a door that I'm very excited about. Oh, and what about Tarkin? What'd you think about Tarkin? Since you've read so much about it, and then you finally saw it.
I was like, whatever. I don't care, man. Use a different actor, the same guy with it seems like a long way to go just to get that effect.
Yeah, and they still aren't anywhere close to for really passing, like, realistically, believably.
I thought it looked all right, but, I mean, again, it's a long way to go to give that to the super hyper Star Wars fans, and I guess that's why they did it.
I don't really know why they. Maybe they just wanted to do it.
I don't know.
Like, hey, look what we did.
Yeah.
Did you see the Tron Legacy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It did come along. It had come a long way since then.
Mm-hmm.
Because the guy who did it for ILM specifically called that movie out. Like, yeah, it was really we didn't like that at all. So we're gonna try to do it a lot better. Mm-hmm. But yeah, tremendous. Like all this stuff about actors' death rights now, and it's like, do you see how much they had to go through? Like,
yeah.
This is never gonna be cost effective. It's never gonna be easy.
Well. You don't know.
I don't think in our lifetime it'll be easy. I could be wrong. We'll have self-driving cars, though.
Anyway, that's enough of that.
How's the drink?
It's good. I think it's certainly not hurting anything.
It should be a net slightly buzzed, and that's about it, if at the worst.
I won't complain about that.
So I had a hell of a weekend.
I heard. I mean, I didn't hear all the details, but...
Yeah, I know Erica didn't tell you all of it.
I heard it was, you know, I saw the Facebook post. Yeah, you had a...
I had one of the... And I'm known...
I was just going to let you talk, man.
I was just going to say, I know I'm prone to embellishment, but I had one of the most traumatic single experiences of my life this past weekend.
I believe it.
I've been trying to unpack it.
So it was going to be a great weekend.
It was going to be an awesome weekend. I was going to a wedding for a friend that I've known for years. I don't get to see very much anymore, but I was super excited to see her and meet her wife, who I hadn't met yet. They were just soon to, you know, about to be wife. And they live in San Francisco. So I was going to bring Erica and Simon too. We're going to, because, you know, we go back years. It was just like the trip was so expensive just for me.
Right.
And then when I added them and it was like $1,500 more. I'm like, yeah, we're not going to do that. So I flew out alone, and it was pretty bad from the start.
Oh.
So JFK is having tarmac work done. And so it is playing havoc with at least JetBlue. Now, this has nothing to do with British Airways and their giant IT failure that shut down the entire airline.
Oh, yeah.
This has nothing to do with that. It's just the timing is identical. Yeah, this was, my flight was delayed going out of Rochester. I had a hour and a half long layover that became an 8-minute from the moment they opened the door to my first plane to when they closed the doors on the second plane. I had 8 minutes. So I fucking booked. And there was this poor old, there was two, me and another guy about my age and an older woman who were trying to get that flight to San Francisco.
Did they get them the golf cart thing?
Nope. It was, there was no time for it. So the guy and I took off and the woman's like, please ask them to wait. And I was like, we both said, yeah, we'll do that. So we got to the gate and I said to them, like, just so you know, there's an older woman. She was in the same situation I was. I ran over here.
And they're like, don't care.
Bye-bye. Basically, it was like, oh, they're like, oh, you made a really good time. And then they sent me in and I'm looking back and they're not letting us on the plane yet. We're like all in the breezeway. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching the door and they fucking close it. And I'm the last person in line. I'm like, come on, man. I told you she was coming. And so, like, I got annoyed, like, for this poor old woman. Because I, like, felt like I let her down. So an attendant walked by, and I was like, listen, I'm sorry. I know there's a woman who's trying to catch this flight. And through no fault of her own, she didn't. Can you please look for her? And she goes, oh, okay, I'll go look. Like, I got the feeling I actually got through to her. Mm-hmm. And then she, like, picked up her radio. And then about 2 minutes later, they escorted the old woman.
Oh.
So she actually made the flight.
Good job. Good
thanks. You. She was so panicked, she ran by the gate or walked by the gate. Like, so really would have missed the flight if they hadn't been looking for her. So I got there pretty frazzled. Mm-hmm. Didn't sleep well the night before. I don't travel well. It just worries me. And this is important. I was tired from the moment I landed.
Okay.
And I kind of just wanted to, I was on West Coast time, mm-hmm. behind on sleep. I'm an East Coaster, so I'm 3 hours screwed already. My son gets us up between 6 and 7 a.m. At least the last week he was doing that. So I knew I was going to wake up really early.
And you're not a great sleeper anyway.
Not a great sleeper. Not a great travel sleeper especially. So I'm like, I'm staying in an airport hotel. And I was like, it's got to be far enough away. No, it was not far enough away. Mm. Every plane sounded like it was landing on the fucking roof. But my friend like texts me and she's like, hey, come out. You can help us set up a bit and I can see you. And I'm like, I haven't eaten. I'm tired, but I really knew. I knew what a wedding's like. I'm not going to see mm-hmm. her if I don't do this.
Right.
So I like got checked in and got a little bit of food and like went out and got to see her and catch up with her, which was great. And was doing a bunch of stuff for the wedding. This was a communal wedding. I don't know how else to describe it.
Okay. I don't know what that means.
I'll explain it. It's like everyone pitched in to make the wedding happen.
Okay.
Like my friend didn't really, they didn't have money to do this.
Okay.
So like we provided the booze. It was a community bar. Mm-hmm. People signed up to bartend. And do cleanup. They did. I mean, they got a mechanical bull, which was cool, and they had a taco truck come out that, you know, you bought your own food. So they did a couple of little things, but they got the space, which is a really cool space. It was a lamp restoration like warehouse.
Which, okay.
It was cool. It was a giant open space, industrial, lots of room. It was cool because all the lamps worked. So they just turned out the lights, turned the lamps on. I'm like, this is really fucking cool. So there was a lot to be done. I saw that they finally met her wife, and she had just come from a talk in Stanford. She was exhausted. So I was like, I'm totally not going to try to like engage her in conversation. I'm just going to greet her and leave her be.
Okay.
So, of course, stayed way later than I wanted, and there was still plenty to be done, but I had to go. Slept like shit, right? So I wake up the next morning. I can't sleep past 6. There's no way. That's like 9 a.m. It's later than I ever sleep.
Right.
So I'm up, and I planned to go to the Golden Gate Bridge because I knew I was going to be up early. I was going to take advantage of it. I was hoping to have been rested, but c'est la vie. Mm-hmm. So I figured out the BART, the Bay Area Rapid Transit. I'm pretty proud of that because by the time I like did multiple trips throughout the day, and I actually got stopped by a European family who had just gotten out of the airport, and I was able to help them get to their stop. So I was like, I'm a tourist too, but I actually can help you. So I walked the Golden Gate Bridge.
You walked it?
Yeah. It's like 3 miles round trip. It was early in the morning. I had plenty of time.
It's cold, right? I mean, it's always cold there.
The cold, whatever every Californian says, the coldest winter I ever spent was a summer in San Francisco.
Right.
Yeah. And it was, I guess, unseasonably cold too. So it was in like the low 50s, which you know what? It's great when you're like.
And windy.
Well, super windy. Yeah. I had a jacket. I had a hoodie. I was not in any way dressed for the beach.
Right.
So I was fine there.
We went there in like June.
Yeah, you guys were there.
It was same thing. It was cold.
Mm-hmm. But I knew. I mean, I'd been warned. So the bridge walk out wasn't too bad. It's a lot of foot traffic and there's not enough room. It's a lot of bikers, cyclists. So you kind of have to like be really aware because people are like constantly trying to get around each other. So there's joggers, cyclists, and people walking both directions. And there's only two lanes. So I took a bunch of pictures. I was on my way back and I passed cops a couple times. And I was like, oh, yeah, bridge cops. That like, makes sense.
Just
like police officers.
Just standing around.
On bikes. Bike cops. But yeah, like standing, just kind of watching. So I went out to the other, to the north side on the bay and took some pictures, looked around, peed a couple times, had a lot of coffee, came back. About halfway across the bridge, I accidentally turned off my music on my phone. I had my Bluetooth earphones in. So I like kind of stopped all of a sudden. I was like, ah, shit. Like, yeah, it was really in the moment of like enjoying the view and my music. Because they're noise canceling, so I wasn't bombarded with sound. So I like whip out my phone and I'm like kind of furiously trying to get the music to play again. And I look up and there's two cops in my face. Like out of nowhere. I didn't even see them coming. And one of them just starts this really awkward conversation with me. And like, they're clearly like trying to figure out what I'm doing. And so the whole, like, it seems weird. It was weird. It was extremely weird. It was the trip. It was a weird trip. So I'm like, I mean, I guess I was kind of weaving for a second because I was distracted. So maybe they think I've been drinking or they think I'm suicidal because I stopped on the middle of a bridge that isn't a designated, you know, viewpoint. And God forbid you do anything in an Orwellian world that isn't designated.
So you think he's like, is it illegal for me to stop walking?
In a manner of speaking, they thought I was drunk or it was because they thought I was going to commit suicide. Okay. That's what I determined in that like split second that I was trying to figure it out. So we were talking and I was like, okay, I need to like get them to realize I'm sober in my right mind and a productive consumerist member of society. That's the tact I took. So he's trying to make awkward conversation with me. So I just start talking about Spotify Premium and how it doesn't work on smartwatches and how it's really frustrating. The stupidest, most pointless conversation, but it's very specific. And I made sure to lose him in the conversation because I've been doing nothing but research. Obviously, I know more. So he's talking about Hulu Music. Because he doesn't understand what he's talking about at all. So that kind of eventually whatever.
You don't have a Hulu Music subscription.
I don't have a Hulu because it doesn't exist. I'm fairly certain of that. So eventually I got, they left me alone. They're like, okay, thanks. Like no explanation. Like it was under the guise of a friendly conversation, but it was still an affront. Yeah. You know, it was just like, all right, but not a big deal.
You probably looked like you were on something.
Well, what I was telling, to come back to this later, I was telling a friend yesterday about it, and he goes, oh, well, you know that the suicide rates off of the Golden Gate Bridge have recently skyrocketed.
Oh.
And I'm like, ah, so they see me stop. He's like, they probably saw you stop, furiously typing on your phone, like you're sending a goodbye text, and then they think you're about to jump. And I'm like, well, that's fair. That's okay. Totally fair. Drop the limit. So that could be in a strange mood, but got back to the hotel, bought my booze, and then it was just get ready for the wedding and then just work. I went into waiter mode. You know, I was like, I'm gonna help finish setting up, I'm gonna tend the bar, ended up like chauffeuring around, so like they pulled up in the car and like piled out and I jumped in and parked in the parking garage. Like I was just winging it. They were just giving me like commands. So I get it parked. It is a protest wedding.
Oh.
So they did not get approval from City Hall.
Okay.
So they like kind of had people come in under like tourism pretenses or, hey, I'm here to get pictures with the bride and groom because all the weddings were done already. So we all came in and they smuggled in these giant banners.
I've never heard of something like this
before. I don't think it's a thing. I mean, it is now because it happened. But yeah, it was a protest wedding.
So they had rented the space legit.
No. It was a legitimate protest wedding. They brought in a pastor. I think her name was Carly. She was really cool. They brought her in. So she married them. But like the sheriff's men were like circling around, like unsure what to do. And they brought in these giant banners. So there was a crush the, this is important for later, crush the hetero patriarchy banner and one. And there's all these massive banners.
Okay.
That they snuck in and hung like from balconies and stuff. It was very well choreographed. I mean, it was pretty impressive. My friend and her wife like had this back and forth script that they went through. It was peaceful. It was well choreographed. They seemed to know about how long to be in there. And then we went on the steps. And there was someone from our party who was kind of liaisoning, who was the liaison with the police.
Okay.
And he was like, yeah, we're going
to
be gone
trying
soon.
To get them off to not
do anything. Arrest everyone. Yeah. Well, they couldn't have. They went out to get a paddy wagon and there was 160 of us or something. So we went outside, and then like I had a cutout early. I'm like, I got to go get the car because I need to get people. We got to go set up the rest of the thing. So I kind of missed the end of it. They had some speakers, some people who've been like fighting for decades, all the way back to the Summer of Love and Stonewall and that kind of thing. So it was interesting. I wanted to listen to it. So I went and got the car, picked up some people.
So this is just like kind of taking you by surprise. Like I thought this was just going to be a wedding.
No, I knew.
Okay.
I knew. I didn't know to what extent it was going to be that choreographed. So we drive back to the lamp factory, start getting set up. Okay, so take stock of me at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I am severely behind on sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Have not eaten enough. I've eaten, like, I'm still trying to do my fasting. And I told them on the way, I was like, hey, by the way, guys, like, I have not eaten much today. It is extremely important I eat or I'm going to, like, not do well tonight. There was nothing to eat. We were in this industrial area.
Oh.
So, like, we're behind on everything. I'm setting up mixers and doing all this shit, running around. And there were other people running around, too. I was working with other people. It was a great community effort. But I finally was like, they were running late because my friend's generally late. And I was like, we were out of ice. We didn't have enough ice. So I'm like, I'm going to go get ice and I'm going to get some fucking food.
Mm-hmm.
So I go out. So I kind of miss them getting there and stuff. But I did not pull off the eating thing correctly. So I did not have enough food in my system. And the wedding's is already underway by the time I get back. I got the bar set up with the beer or the ice. And I'm like, I need a drink. Right? Now, she had asked me the day before, will you do a toast? She's like, I'm sorry, I gave you no warning. And I'm like, yeah, I'd be happy to. I have a go-to toast.
Mm-hmm.
Used it before. And they had an itinerary. So I knew when I was going to get the toast. So I'm like, okay, I just got to get food and no booze in me, and I'll be fine, right?
Okay.
I didn't give the toast till 4 hours later.
Oh.
We all thought, I checked with the other people, we all thought it was forgotten.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, well, I'm stressed. I definitely earned a couple drinks, so I'm going to have a couple drinks.
Mm-hmm.
So 11:45 rolls.
So you're thinking, I'm not doing a toast.
Yeah, I'm off the hook now.
Yeah.
11:45 p.m. West Coast time rolls around. So this is almost 3 a.m. my time. I go to bed at 11:30 every night, my time.
Right.
Rolls around. I am pretty far gone. I just went on the mechanical bull. I was troubleshooting some Wi-Fi issues for the owner because they were trying to print up the permission thing, the whatever you call it, for the bull, the liability form. I'm all over and I'm out of it. And then they start the toasts. And it's important to really picture the image here. So that banner I mentioned,
yeah,
is set up right above me. So yes. I would love to find a picture of this. Mm-hmm. I go up to give my toast.
So this is like not just everybody standing up wherever they are. This is like going up to a
There's sort of a stage area, and then everyone else is in a circle. So I'm standing. I'm a heterosexual white male.
Mm-hmm.
I work in tech.
Mm-hmm.
These are things that have been brought up as issues for various reasons that night. Not me personally, those things. I'm under literally a banner that's pointing at my fucking head. I realized later that said, crush the hetero patriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
I work in tech and they called out tech bros. And my company's based in Silicon Valley, which is really close there. Like,
yeah,
I was in dangerous territory and never realized it. I was so busy and I had nothing but love and affection for the whole proceedings that I never stopped taking my surroundings.
Mm-hmm.
That's on me. I was very sleep deprived at this point. I was 5 drinks in because who's going to make someone do a toast at midnight, even local time, right?
Right.
It's not a good idea. So I go up to give my toast and I'm a little like shaky. Because I had it sketched out in my head, right? But I'm kind of improvising it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going okay. You know, I can feel the temperature of the room. I'm not that gone. Like, I can still check in. I remember everything very clearly. And there is... So I get to the actual toast part. I did the, like, she balances you out. You know, I remember when she talked about the first time how in love she looked. It was disgusting. It was like one of those cartoon characters that were floating with the hearts coming out of their head. I wanted to just pop the heart balloons coming out. Like, you know, the cute, stupid shit that you say.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting laughs. And then I got to the part where, this is a true story, I asked my grandmother years ago before she died, my grandmother was an awful person, I think, I asked her for a toast. And in that conversation, she goes, out of kind of nowhere, she goes, never bring a black girl home. Like, it was just like, It was actually the first time I realized how racist my grandmother was. And that's a really fucked up moment for me.
Yeah.
And it's really part of the story in my head, if you can kind of see where this is going.
Okay.
So I start with, you know, before my grandmother died, where's it going with the dead grandma story? It's going to make sense. Don't worry. Before my grandmother died, I asked her for a toast. And what I meant to say was the toast that she gave me.
Mm-hmm.
But I have told the story before. And I have brought up the racist comment she made because it gets a laugh in other audiences.
Mm-hmm.
I knew not to say it. But I have no filter.
Uh-huh.
So it comes out. And it is not me saying it. It is clearly... And my grandmother looks at me and she goes, Michael, never bring a black girl home. And I'm quoting exactly what happened because this time slowed at this point. I knew, oh, shit. Like, I am fucked right from this moment. And I was like, Grandma, that's a fucking terrible racist thing to say. And I like turned to the audience. I'm like, you know, I'm sorry. She was a very racist person. Like, I right away went into damage control mode. And I'm like, well, it's done now. What the fuck am I going to do? So I turned to them and I give the toast. Bona fortuna, tutte due. And it was just done. Like, I was screwed. I could tell. Like, everyone was aghast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had just said the worst thing in the world. And from there, it just could not have gotten worse until it did, and then it did, and then it did, and then it did. So there was a lot of, like, quasi-shaming, quasi-apologizing on my behalf at first from my friend.
Mm-hmm.
And then her wife gets on, just goes after me, like, multiple times with the microphone. So she's like, I can't fucking believe you said that. Who the fuck are you? You just ruined my wedding. You've cast dark energy and a dark cloud on the whole proceedings. What are you fucking doing here? Walks away, comes back. I can't fucking believe. Like, just on and on and on. And I, you know what? I knew I fucked up. So I just stood there and from full view of everyone and I fucking took it. Because, you know, she's right. I made a mistake. And I was like, do you want me to leave? And I went back up like halfway through this and I'm like, I want to apologize. You have to understand, I don't agree with this. It's something my grandmother said. It was a very shocking thing. I really did not. I hated my grandmother. And then I got more gasps. And I'm like, I can't fucking win here. So finally, this woman's like, you need to go, blah, 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 blah. So I go outside. I'm really fucking upset, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just in, like, holy shit. I just told I ruined a very good friend's wedding. Like, this is horror mode now, right? This is real-life horror movie. And so I'm outside, and there was someone in the audience who kind of thought she understood where I was trying to go with it. And she was like, an arbitrator or something in real life. So she was very nice. She came outside and was talking to me, and she's like, I get what you were trying to say. I got away from you, and man, was it the wrong crowd.
Yeah.
You know, but she was really nice about it. And she was like, you know, I'll try to talk to them, and stuff. But it finally got to the point where it was like, I need to go. I've been asked to leave, and I'm not going to prolong that, right, out of respect for...
Right.
Everything. So,
leaving is your only...
It's the only right thing to do, right? So I went... There was a side door where we were setting up. So I was out of view of everyone. And Carly, the pastor who married them, she was a Universal Life Church pastor,
mm-hmm.
Who was African-American, mm-hmm. important to the story, was there. And she gave me, like, the saddest look. And I grabbed my stuff, and I'm like... it might not have been Carly, but at this point, things were a little fuzzy. It's just because I was so upset. But I was like, Carly, listen... I didn't in any way mean to offend. And she's like, you're not racist. Like, this helps so much. She goes, I worked with you most of this afternoon. I know you're not racist. Mm-hmm. You're from the East Coast and you're a stand-up comic. I didn't correct her because I knew right. where she was going. She's like, I think you tried to be funny and I think you probably are funny. I think you just couldn't have picked a worse audience for that. And she said, I went to your friend and her wife and I told them he's not racist. I know this.
Mm-hmm.
This is two strangers now who have just randomly stuck up for me. And I appreciated that. So I went home and I barely slept. So at this point, I'm still a wreck now because this is, you know, a day and a half ago. So I still haven't caught up on sleep. And I couldn't stop replaying it. And I kept wanting to be like, because I was also still drunk for a while.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to be like, God, what could I have changed? I'm like, no, I can't fucking do that. I need to learn from this. I need to learn what I did wrong. And then I started to get pissed. And I'm still pretty pissed because I fucked up and I posted on Facebook that I fucked up and I'm not going to hide from the fact that I fucked up. And every time I tell the story, I lead with, I fucked up. But there's fucking up. And then there's telling a true story about someone else's pretty horrible view on another, you know, race of people that you don't agree with and you couldn't make that any clearer. and then being treated like the worst person since Hitler and Stalin had a baby. And that's the difference. And so I'm really fucking pissed. I'm ashamed of that I said that, and then I am so angry at the same time because there was no attempt to even try to discuss it. And these are very...
I think what you're more ashamed of is just not gauging your audience.
I'm
coming at this from, you know, a guy who has done a lot of improv,
mm-hmm.
and like, yeah, I can see how that would work most of the time, but just not in this audience.
But here's the thing. I sober know not to say that because right. I am a very smart person who has studied these things.
I know that, so it's
not that. It's the fact that I was so out of it that I let that part of the story slip when I had meant to hold it back, which is the right thing to do. And the fact that I ruined someone's wedding.
Well, yeah.
And then I thought, how the fuck did I ruin someone's wedding? This was the end of the night. And so it's been a struggle back and forth. Go ahead. Sorry. You've been very kindly listening the whole time. And I'm sure the audience has all things they want to say too.
In a sense, it takes two to tango. You can't ruin somebody else's wedding unless they let you ruin it.
That's the capstone to this whole thing, but we'll get to that.
Oh, okay. That's all I was going to say.
Oh, well, okay. So
I was just going to jump right to that.
Yes, that's where I was going to leave this.
Yeah, it was a mistake. Mm-hmm. And, you know, taking all the other stuff aside from, you know, the trying to have the perspective of somebody who was at the in that audience.
Right.
I've been like, wow, I can't believe he said that.
Right.
If the host or the couple had just kind of laughed it off and let it go.
Or even discussed it in a rational way. Anything.
Anything. It's not ruined. Nothing is ruined. It would have been a faux pas.
The jackhole from the East Coast.
Yeah.
In a room of San Franciscans.
Yeah. But yeah. You know, the person who takes that and I can't let go of this. I'm going to make this an issue. I'm going to make this a big issue. I'm going to let everybody here know that the night is ruined because of this. You can't ruin somebody's wedding, and not in that way, unless they are at least complicit in some way in the ruination.
And my friend came out before I left, and she's like, I can't believe you did this. My wife's in tears now. I don't know if we can continue to be friends. And that really hurt. And
yeah, it seems a shame to throw away so much just off of like a poorly chosen word that certainly didn't change who you were, you know. Didn't make you a... Oh, I didn't realize Mike Carossi was this person.
Super awful racist. Holy shit.
He'd been hiding it so well all of these years.
All these years. Oh my God. Surprise, motherfucker. I'm racist.
Yeah. You're the same person. You just mm-hmm. made a mistake.
In a wedding toast. Which is pretty much where most people make mistakes.
Yeah. But, you know, again, at its worst, it was a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And a mistake that you...
Sorely regret. And I regret that I might have offended anyone with it. I think you probably had to really want to be offended after I was done stuttering through an explanation, but...
Well, I guess now I can give you something that yeah. might make you feel a little better.
Thank you.
We actually picked these up a while ago. This is at the crinkle, 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 crinkle. Little brown bag. This is at the from the Underground... Arts and Crafts Festival.
Okay.
Not festival, whatever, fair, whatever. It was the same place where I got you.
The Pyramid Head?
Yeah, Pyramid gotcha. Head. They have it every year at the Village Gate.
Gotcha.
Upstairs. So they have lots of...
But it's underground.
Yeah. Second floor, underground, whatever. Yeah. It doesn't have to make sense.
Right.
Underground.
Not at all.
So I walked by this one place and they were selling some cool things. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I'm going to get these for Mike.
Thank you.
So here's some of them.
Huh.
And you can describe what you're looking at.
So these are magnets. Yeah. And they are, it looks like not quite blueprints, maybe blueprints. or like the outer linear diagrams of an AT-AT, and they're dated 79, 82. Wow.
Yeah, I don't know how authentic these are, but they look cool.
Yeah.
So these are just like refrigerator magnets.
Well, it says Ralph McQuarrie. So he was the original, he's the guy who created all these.
Okay.
The artist for Star Wars.
Then it probably is that.
That's cool.
But again, probably not officially licensed. In fact, no way these are officially licensed.
Nice.
But yeah.
Yeah, so there's an cool X-Wing and there's a somewhat simplified version of R2. It's funny, he's like kind of stripped down compared to what he's like in the movie. The AT-AT is pretty accurate though. That's cool. Thank you, man.
And to go along with that, you probably don't need any more coasters.
But no, you know what? Anyway. I need them down here.
Okay.
You can finally stop drinking.
Well, there we go. We can finally have new drink coasters here.
Thank you, man. These are awesome. Aw, thanks.
And these are coasters with the same...
the pictures, yeah.
Basic pictures. And you can see, if you turn on the back, you can see all the different ones in there.
Oh, yeah. Pack. So there's a TIE Bomber, X-Wing, AT-AT, and a Snowspeeder. Or an A-Wing, I guess. Nice. That's cool. Thank you, man.
And the guy was telling me about this, and it was kind of interesting to me. I said, oh, these are laminated. He's like, oh, no, my friend has this machine that he made that makes these out of recycled plastic bottles.
Whoa.
And I guess some dude somewhere has made a machine that uses plastic bottles to effectively laminate things. And he said you could run these through a dishwasher or whatever you want. They're super solid.
Nice. Yeah, there's a heft to them.
Yeah.
Huh. Very cool. Thank you.
So anyway, hope that cheers you up a little bit.
It does. No, thank you very much. It's very nice. Yeah. I've been thinking about nothing but this experience.
Well, obviously.
And just waffling.
What? Mike, you're not one to dwell on things.
Right?
That sounds so weird.
When you have a horrendously traumatic experience.
And,
not going to forget that I fucked
up. And just
up.
To add insult to injury, you had problems with the flight coming home, right?
Yep. Yeah. So they had to move me to a different flight, which was also delayed. So my flights were all fucked up. So I didn't get home till almost 2 a.m. And going on next to no sleep. So I'm still. And then Simon was up last night. I was like rocking with him for a while. So I have yet to get a full night's sleep in like a week.
Nice.
Yeah. So I was kind of worried I would like fall asleep during the podcast, but we made it.
Yeah.
So that's my story.
I haven't spat out anything horrible.
Well, but your dog, like, collar thing did
fill.
Yeah,
it's so. Gonna... there's no way I'm not getting any of this on the carpet.
Mike, nope, careful. That's not making any noise.
Nice try.
I tried. Wait, Mike, no. Okay, lean over. Just lean. Okay. There we go.
Oh, that's a little bit.
You missed a bit. Okay, there. We are buddies in space. You are.
S. Michael Smith. And you are.
M. Michael Carassi. Oh, I'll just play Melanie's thing.
Yeah. I think...
Do you want to read it, like, with that voice? See if you can get through it?
Oh, God.
Would that be cruel? No, if it's going to be mean, don't do it.
Buddies in Space is a Stolen Dress Entertainment production. visit stolendress.com to check out other Stolen Dress podcasts. Blogs, tweets, videos, and books. Or don't.
I don't fucking care.
No, do, because it's cool and everything.
I guess.
Yeah.
Well, hey, you survived. Did the drink help? Hurt? Or?
It certainly didn't hurt.
Okay, good.
Probably helped a little bit. Eat my-